Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. Much attention has been focused on the hearing scheduled for this afternoon at the Florida Supreme Court to consider the legality of the manual recounts going on in three counties there. Well, we'd like to focus your attention in the court of public opinion and to a different question. Is it time for one of the candidates to concede? While the nation has shown patience for 2 weeks, we're now entering into week three. And if you listen, you can hear some of the whispers already starting. Maybe, for instance, it's time for Al Gore to concede. Now, whoever conceded, it said, would have the gratitude of the nation, and maybe even a good shot at the campaign in 2004. Oh, you probably don't want to think about another campaign. Well, how do you think this one should end? Should Al Gore concede? We're going to look at that question today with Doug Kamek. He's chair and professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University. Professor Kamek, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Now, the last time we talked to you last week, and you said that you thought Al Gore should concede, but that was before all of the hullabaloo with the different hearings and questions going on at the Florida Supreme Court. What do you think today?
Well, I still think it was unwise for the vice president to press for the multiple recounts that he's had, and I think he's gotten several decisions that would have suggested to him that a concession would have been appropriate, and he could have saved both Florida and the rest of us a considerable amount of anxiety. But at this point, it's the 11th and a half hour. He has marshaled enormous legal resources, has called upon the Florida Supreme Court to sit in judgment yet again of the question of whether or not the court should intervene to basically correct voter error on the day of the election and to reevaluate the punch card ballots. I don't think he's going to concede this morning, given the amount of time, money, and resources he's put into this. But I would hope that once the Florida Supreme Court reaches its judgment, and we can expect that, I would think, either early tomorrow or Wednesday, at that point it would be appropriate for the vice president to concede. And I say that not prejudging the outcome, but feeling fairly confident that the law is going to require the outcome that the recounts have already shown, namely that the Secretary of State has properly or should properly certify a final result in favor of Governor Bush.
Why not pursue lawsuits for the manual recount? There are, regardless of who you want to have win, there are citizens who feel that their vote either wasn't counted or that it was taken from them, whether it be by design or by the machinery of some of the ballots.
Well, if there was a machinery problem, I would agree. But the one thing that we know that is true is that there was no machine failure on Election Day in Florida. Neither side has pleaded that. If there was...
I'm going to interject. I know that there are some voters in Palm Beach County, for instance, who are saying that the way the ballot aligned on the punch hole machinery was confusing and led them to vote for the wrong person.
Right, and of course we know this morning that the trial courts, at least in Florida, have rejected that argument and have said that it basically does not call for the remedy that they were asking for.
Well, they were asking for a revote.
They were asking for a revote. Now, no one supports confusion. I must say that that particular ballot is reasonably plain to me. It could have been plainer, I suppose, but it was published in advance. 96% of the voters in Palm Beach County were able to figure it out. And if there is confusion on the day of an election, and goodness knows, living in California, I can tell you we have more propositions than, Heinz has varieties, and there can be confusion on a given day. And if somebody makes a mistake, The appropriate time to make that correction is on the election day, to ask for a new ballot, and that will be readily supplied. But once you leave, finality and the interest in uniform treatment, non-subjective treatment, and a final result starts to grow in importance. And there's always those twin interests in an election. Accurate as possible, but ultimately there are some deadlines that have to be observed, and there are some procedures that have been set in advance that apply to everyone. And if they're disregarded, or either mistakenly or intentionally, it's simply too late after the fact to do anything else.
You have said that Al Gore and Bill Daley are inviting a constitutional crisis. What do you mean?
Well, this is an area that is not well trod, thankfully, in the Constitution. It's not one where you can go to the case precedents and find multiple cases on what to do when elections are this close or when there are doubts about the meanings of provisions that aren't used very often. I mean, this we had a number of elections in the 19th century and in our early history that were sent to the House of Representatives for resolution in difficult times, especially in the post-Civil War era. But Al Gore is basically, first of all, I think, trying to win this election by litigation rather than by vote. And I don't think that's consistent with the Democratic tradition. But also, if he succeeds in casting enough doubt about the legitimacy of the outcome, one of the things that might start to happen is that people will try and use every aspect of the Constitution to their own political advantage. We already know, for example, that there's a Democratic consultant going around the country trying to persuade electors who have been duly appointed in other states to not follow their pledge to their own political party, so that on the day the electoral votes are counted in December, that they will have encouragement, as it were, to be unfaithful. Well, that poses a problem to the Constitution. If, in fact, enough electors are unfaithful so that no single candidate gets a majority of the electoral vote, the election in that circumstance goes to the House of Representatives, and that takes it not closer to the people, but farther to the people. We then have our representatives in Congress sitting as state delegations, casting the ultimate deciding vote, and those delegations are highly split in a partisan way. Not every state delegation, in fact, may have an opportunity to vote under those circumstances because they are so evenly divided. In fact, by my count, there are four states that have perfect numbers, an equal number of Democrats and Republicans, and unless somebody moves within those mm-hmm. delegations one way or the other, they're not going to cast a vote. That's going to disenfranchise multiple states in the constitutional process.
So succinctly, what is the crisis?
Well, the crisis is this, and that is the farther away we get from November 7th, the farther away we get from you and me. You and I went into the voting booth on November 7th, and we had particular conceptions of the world. Who's our best foreign policy leader? Who's the best to address the impending bankruptcy in Social Security or Medicare? Who's the best to address the educational system in the United States? Issues of importance to ourselves and to our families and our communities. That's what is supposed to determine presidential outcomes. Not clever lawyering in Florida trying to find exceptions to the Florida election procedures. Not clever constitutional lawyering before the Supreme Court, or if it doesn't go to the Supreme Court, within the halls of Congress where partisans can raise objections to electors from other states. Those things are provided for in the Constitution in extremis. I don't think we want to run there.
Well, now, Professor, it's interesting because you're almost making it sound as if this is a partisan thing with Democrats doing this, but the truth is the Republicans were ready to do pretty much the same steps if this election had flip-flopped. I mean, isn't this more a case of a close election than it is a case of one party or the other?
Well, I wouldn't, as a constitutional law professor, I wouldn't sanction it from either party, and I must say that I questioned the initial decision of the Bush campaign to go into federal court. I thought that was unwise at the time they did it. I understood their reasoning. Mm-hmm. Their reasoning, if you accept it, is that they felt that that was a preserving the status quo type of action rather than seeking to overturn one. And I will say, if you're kind of counting the balance here, I think the Republicans have been slightly more principled, and I would hold out as the example that there are multiple states where there could be automatic recounts because of the razor-thin deciding vote. Wisconsin, Iowa, New Mexico probably falls into that category. And thus far, the Republicans, I think, have done the right thing. They've said, look, it is close. The statutes allow for the recount, but we're not going to pursue it. Al Gore had that same choice. Al Gore had that choice on election night. The Florida statutes say, yes, if it's razor thin, within 0.5%, a recount, machine recount, will be done. But it also says that if the losing candidate for the good of the nation or the good of the state decides that no recount is necessary, he can direct that none be done. Well, Al had a choice. Vice President Gore had a choice. He didn't choose to decline the recount.
Now, there are many who would argue that it was automatic, that he really didn't have the right to waive it.
Well, if they're arguing that, they haven't read the Florida statute, because the Florida statute expressly provides, and this didn't get popularly reported in the press, but it is unambiguous that if the losing candidate requests no recount will be done, none will be done. So it is not mandatory. The law doesn't force a recount, and certainly it didn't force multiple recounts. He got a machine recount, but he wasn't satisfied with that. Now he's getting a hand recount, and this morning we find not only is he not satisfied with the hand recount, he's not satisfied with the standards that Palm Beach County are applying in the hand recount. He wants every conceivable possible speculative vote to count for him, and therefore he's now chastising his own Democratic canvassing board in Palm Beach County for not being as liberal as they should be in finding votes for him in the hand recount. I mean, when is it going to end? And I think the answer for the vice president is when he wins. But that's not what the law provides.
We're talking to Doug Kamek. He's chair and professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University. He also was a constitutional legal counsel for the Reagan administration from 1985 to 1989. Should Al Gore concede? We'd like to hear your reaction to that thought. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Eric in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess my view on this is there really isn't a crisis. This has been generated by the media for their own purposes. It's true some Republican Bush supporters have taken a hold of that and tried to foreclose on counting votes that were properly cast. I think in the case in Florida, here we have a situation where we know from the producers of the equipment that the fast count that we do first is not that accurate. Obviously, in America, we want everyone's vote counted. I think people are perfectly satisfied with that. That's not a crisis, and we should just let it go forward.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Professor?
Well, I would have no disagreement with Eric if the votes were properly cast, but see, that's assuming something not in evidence. What the vice president is asking for is for improperly cast votes to be counted. He wants the votes to be fixed after the fact. The instructions on every ballot in Florida says, take this stylus, punch it through the hole that matches your candidate, and make sure that there are no hanging chads behind it. It says that in explicit terms. It also says if you make a mistake on the ballot, you can get a new ballot. And if the voters can't follow the instructions or choose not to follow the instructions, it's not up to the government of the United States to cast a proper ballot for them. We all have to follow the rules. And on election day, we're told, for example, that the polls close at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. or whatever the local time may be. If we show up at 7:15 and the polls close at 7, we may have very good reasons why we were 15 minutes late. We may have had to go to the child care center to pick up our child. We may have had a car breakdown. We may have been in the hospital. But it still doesn't get us a vote.
We're going to go to Gary in Minneapolis. Gary, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to quote Alan Keyes because his particular position mirrors what mine is. When he said, neither George Bush nor Albert Gore really has a moral right to concede because of all of the invested efforts and money to get them to the position that they're in, and that the remedies in the court system and the remedies prescribed by the Constitution haven't been exhausted yet.
Okay.
I'll hang up and take my answer off the phone.
Well, thanks, Gary.
Well, that's a good insight, Gary, and I guess I don't disagree to the extent that you qualified your answer by saying to the extent that the Constitution and the laws of the states and the federal government govern the outcome. I agree. The Constitution of the United States puts the determination of this issue in the hands not of the Florida Supreme Court, by the way, but in the Florida legislature. Under our American Constitution, it's the legislature of a state, not the courts of the state, that determine how presidential electors are appointed. And in this instance, the High Court of Florida is really the agent of the legislature. They have, in my judgment, no choice but to follow the law as written in Florida. And the law as written in Florida says the election is to be certified 7 days after, and if there are late
tallies. But the law is contradictory.
No, it really isn't. Let me ask you, why do you think it's contradictory?
Well, there are those who would argue that the law is written so that it says, yes, manual recounts can be pursued at the same time that it has this deadline. And it's very hard, for instance, just look at Miami-Dade County. That's a very large county. For them to do a manual recount and meet that deadline would have been difficult.
Well, it would have been difficult, but not impossible. The fact of the here's two things that are true, I think, in terms of the statute. Volusia County, which is admittedly a smaller county, got their recount done in time and got it done in time to have it certified by the statutory deadline. Both Palm Beach and Miami-Dade have indicated that it would take roughly 5 or 6 days to do a full recount. They now fudge on that time a little bit, but those were their public statements. Had they undertaken the recount when it was asked for by Mr. Gore, they would have been finished by the deadline. But instead, they chose not to undertake it. In fact, one of them chose not to get around to deciding whether or not to do a hand recount until the day of the deadline itself.
I have to interject here. Is the only reason that there's a sense of urgency is because of the deadline imposed by the legislature saying 7 days after the election? Because otherwise, what's the hurry?
Well, it's not just that. The other aspect of this is whether or not this is a hand recount of properly cast votes, or this is an attempt to improperly cast votes that shouldn't count. The fact of the matter is that there were instructions as to how to cast a ballot. And if those instructions were not followed, it cannot be executed by someone else. That's part of Florida law as well. And manual recounts are allowed, as you correctly point out, under the Florida Code, but they are allowed only in certain circumstances. If there is a system-wide failure in terms of the tabulation of the vote, then the statute provides that the first thing you do is you reset the election parameters on the computer and run it again on the machine. If it still doesn't work, the statute in Florida says go get new software. If that still doesn't work, then you are authorized to do a manual recount so that properly cast votes can be counted. It says nothing about convening panels of people who are convened in a highly partisan composition, I might add, to pull chads off of the back of ballots or to hold them up to the sun looking for indentations. Florida, not surprisingly, doesn't have a word in its statutes about how to interpret voter intent in terms of chads and the like. Some statutes do, by the way. Massachusetts, for example, has a very clear outline of how to undertake a manual recount under such circumstances. But
they no longer use that sort of ballot. My understanding is the Secretary of State there banned the use of a punch card ballot.
Well, if that's the case, he's got an interesting statutory code that gives him specifications that he's not using.
Well, I think because they had such a recount. All right, we're going to go to Jim in Stillwater. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. I wanted to dispute your guest's point of view that seems to be that this is Gore's election to concede. I think it's debatable that Gore has been cast as a spoiler or a poor loser just because of a false impression created by how the election results in Florida were broadcast by the news media. And I also think that it's clear that there's a partisan confrontational atmosphere in Florida and that both candidates have lost the chance to meet early on to try and mediate a process that could help determine Florida's vote. It may have been doomed to failure, but there was never any effort until just very recently by Gore. And then my last point is that confrontation is certainly not bad. I am myself very loath to put myself in confrontational situations, but it is necessary to make progress often, and that will happen, and there will be hopefully two kind of resolutions to this process. One will be legal when the leader will be chosen, but the second can be political, and one of these two men can still yet show themselves to be a leader by how the political aspects of this are resolved and allow things to go on in Washington, hopefully in a better vein than they have since 1994.
Jim, I think those are wonderful comments, especially with regard to what I think you're emphasizing, and that is the key for the good of the country is how well the transition, whoever wins, is now carried out. The transition period is always very important in terms of how well a political administration begins, whether it gets off to a good start by articulating a clear vision and goals and objectives for the country, and it appoints men and women of integrity to do our business for us over the next 4 years. It's even more important in this circumstance that after this rancorous litigation in Florida and the doubt that we've had for a week and or more that take place. So I think that's I certainly have nothing more than complete support for that aspect of your comment.
Do you think that both men have shown leadership in the last week, the kind of leadership we want in the White House?
Is this to me or to Jim?
This is to you, sir.
I would say we haven't seen very much of either of them, and in a way I understand that. I think they turned it over to their delegates over the last week or so to speak for them because of the supposition that if one or the other was seen too often in the national press, it would look as if they were grasping or playing a role that they shouldn't play. I will say, I think on balance all of them have handled themselves reasonably well. In a partisan way, I probably could pick on one statement or another of both sides, but I won't do that. I just want to end with one compliment. I think what happened to the military ballots over the weekend is a disgrace to the United States and a disgrace to the military services. And I was absolutely delighted to see that Senator Lieberman, who's been reelected to the Senate, complimented that point, that one of the things that became plain, and I don't think this was known to the American people generally, is that it is extraordinarily hard for military men and women to cast an absentee ballot. The reason 1,439, I think it was, military ballots were disqualified over the weekend, close to 39% of the total, was not because it wasn't clear as to who they wanted to vote for, whether it was Bush or Gore. It was because the signature maybe wasn't in the right place on the ballot, or it wasn't across the seam of the ballot, or a registration number had been put on to the ballot by a poll worker rather than the serviceman who couldn't remember it, or that the postmark wasn't there because the ballot was delivered through the APO or diplomatic pouch service. Now, this is starting to get insulting, if not ridiculous, and it's certainly not the level of complexity that you and I face when we go into the polling place. We shouldn't make it more difficult for somebody in Bahrain to cast a ballot than when they do it in the local community.
We're talking to Doug Kamek. He's chair and professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University. He served as constitutional legal counsel in the Reagan administration from 1985 to 1989. And we are talking about his supposition that for the good of the nation, Vice President Al Gore should concede this presidential election. How do you respond to that idea? 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We do want to remind you that we will be carrying live coverage of the Florida Supreme Court hearing today, starting at 1 p.m., of course, all eyes on Florida, on the question that they will take up of whether the manual recounts in Florida should continue and if those votes should be folded into the final presidential tally. Again, we'll be bringing you that at 1. Right now, however, you're listening to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer, and now we're going to bring you Greta Cunningham. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Thank you, Catherine, and good morning. Teams from both presidential candidates will make their arguments this afternoon before the Florida Supreme Court. George W. Bush's lawyers will be telling the court today that it shouldn't keep the country on hold during one recount after another. But Al Gore's lawyers are ready to argue that some counties should get more time to complete the hand recounts, which are now underway in three counties. The arguments begin at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Some residents of Florida's Palm Beach County who wanted the entire county to vote again are being turned away by a judge in West Palm Beach. He says he doesn't have the legal authority to order the revote. The residents said they were confused by the county's butterfly ballot and had voted for the wrong candidate or for more than one. Al Gore says he never would have thought the election would still be undecided on November 20th. He spoke today by satellite from the White House to a family policy conference in Nashville, an annual event that he organized. He pointed out that the conference had been postponed from the summer, the idea being that it would take place after the election was over. George W. Bush is at work this morning in the Texas State Capitol. He told reporters on his way in that he's, quote, feeling great. In regional news, a Minnesota Twins panel is set to consider an untested idea in the quest to get a new stadium. Trade development rights to land throughout Minneapolis for a developer's cash contribution to a downtown stadium. The proposition will be part of a proposed financial package released tonight at a new ballpark committee meeting. The 17-member city-appointed panel has been meeting since September, discussing a new ballpark for the Twins, built primarily with private money. New ballpark leaders say they've heard initial interest from developers. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for cloudy skies with occasional flurries statewide. It'll be partly cloudy in the west this afternoon. High temperatures today ranging from 10 in the northwest to near 20 in the southeast. At this hour, some light snow is falling in Rochester, a temperature of 14. Overcast skies in Duluth and 14. And in the Twin Cities, cloudy skies and 17 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
Today's programming is sponsored in part by a friend honoring the birthday of Mike McGuire, whose buildings and paintings had the rigor and poetry of the land.
Well, no doubt about it, Christmas came early this year, and it's time for us to mark Thanksgiving a little bit early, too. I'm Gary Eichten, here to thank all of you who so generously contributed to our membership drive. Once again, you have proven conclusively that you are absolutely the best audience around. Folks who not only listen, but who do your part to make sure there's something good to listen to. You really do make it all possible. Thanks for the early Christmas present, and keep on listening.
Today's programming is made possible by the annual support of listeners like you. You can join online at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. We are continuing our conversation with Doug Kamek. He's chair and professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University. He served as a constitutional legal counsel in the Reagan administration, 1985 to 1989. We're talking to him, of course, about how we are entering into week three of this presidential election. Now, Professor Kamek thinks that it's time for Al Gore to concede. What do you think? 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities at 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Now, we'd like to ask you, Professor Kamek, before we go back to the calls, what do you think the role of the court should be in deciding the election in Florida?
Well, I think they have a very limited role. The way the statutes are written, Catherine, is this. The Constitution of the United States puts the exclusive authority to appoint presidential electors not in the state generally, but in a specific branch of the state, in the state legislature. And then the federal statutes authorize a state legislature to create not only the election mechanism by which those electors will be selected, but also to give the judiciary a limited role to resolve disputes. And that's what Florida has done. And so I think what the argument basically is this morning in the Florida State Supreme Court is to define the court's own role. And the Gore side will say, of course, that the court has an obligation to allow manual recounts to go forward and to waive the statutory deadline as to when the final counts are due to the Secretary of State.
Now, how do you think people are going to feel, however, if they decide that the recount shouldn't proceed, the vote shouldn't be folded into the final tally? How is the public going to take a recount that stopped halfway?
Well, I think it depends on how it's characterized. If the Florida court was to say the following, that these really aren't recounts of properly cast votes. These are attempts to complete the casting of improperly cast votes. Then I think the fairness of that decision to exclude that would become clear. I mean, no, everybody would see the unfairness of creating new ballots for somebody who came in to vote on November 7th and to give them a second chance. And I think that's what they're obligated to do under the state statute, namely to say there is a deadline. That was the procedure well known to everyone, established in advance, and you know, the rules of the game are the rules of the game. We don't change them at the end of the game, and if our favored team has insufficient votes, we keep going until our favored team gets a field goal. That's not the way it works.
Let's go to Joe in Minneapolis. Joe, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello, thank you. Yeah, I've got several points that are just don't seem to be pointed out very often in the media, and I'll just I don't know that you know the answers to some of these questions, but some of them I do.
Well, just pick two, Joe. Okay.
Well, listen, I got to make several points to make my point. Okay, we're in Florida. There are many ways of counting votes, and some counties use this punch card system, and which is known to undercount, so that after you look at the situation, you've got to look at a whole map of Florida, where they use what techniques for counting votes. And so the fact it's quite clear that the Gore has the votes in Florida to win, and that's the intent there, because, and I want to give the reasons, is this idea he mentioned, the system-wide failure. Okay, they threw out 19,000 votes in Palm Beach County, and I heard some 6,000 in Jackson County, and in the state of Florida they threw out 120,000 votes. How many votes did they throw out in Minnesota? They hardly throw out any, because the ballot goes in, and if it's voting for two or doesn't have a vote, it comes back. So there's this whole thing of the system-wide failure. The thing only works at 1% rate, except in some counties it was at 3% rate of error. So we got a little problem of.
So Joe, what's your point?
The point is the votes should be counted, and the problem of machine counts is the problem of machine counts. So that's why you've got to have a count that's not a machine count, because these tads get pushed back in the hole, and so they should actually specify. You got to bend, tap, wipe in Western Florida, and in the recount process, they have to wipe the ballots to wipe off the tads so they don't get pushed back in the hole.
Okay, Joe, that's a lot. I want the professor to have a chance to respond.
Well, it's an excellent point, and I think Joe ought to be an advisor to the Gore campaign, because the way he styles the argument is the best argument I think they can make this morning, namely that they're not asking for a hand recount, they're asking for an accurate machine count. And Joe's point is that in Minnesota, the statutes must say, or the rules must say, that you keep feeding that ballot in until it reads properly. That isn't the rule in Florida. The rule in Florida is you feed it through, you get the initial count, you feed it through a second time to get a machine recount, And that's the end of it. And unless you have some other mechanical or computerized system failure, you don't start undertaking a hand recount. And you certainly don't start undertaking to authorize individuals to subjectively pass judgment as to whether or not an indentation or a stray mark near a name either counts for Al Gore or George Bush. There's no way to know that voter intent. And it's too unevenly done to satisfy rules of fairness and uniformity. So these things do vary from state to state, but I think what Joe's point is is that Gore needs to, and his lawyers need to characterize what happened here as an electromechanical or machine failure in order to come within the terms of the Florida statute.
Let's go to Tim. He's calling us from Deer Park, Wisconsin. Tim, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I just have my comment is I believe that President Gore or Vice President Gore should concede at this point. And for a few reasons. Number one, I don't think it was improper for him to have the recount, seeing that it was so close by machine. But I think it shows that it is, this could become an even bigger crisis than it has become. And one, because we can see what it is doing to our nation. Each candidate putting out its own spin, its own legal opinions, which is just inflaming those who have supported these men over the past couple of years in their run for the presidency. Also, I believe it is not wise for our country because as this division in our country increases, I believe those people who are hostile to our country, those who are nations or terrorists who are hostile to our country, can use this as a foothold against us in the future, hoping that we won't respond that we won't respond because of the division and our president will be tentative to take action, things of that nature. So I think it's important to clear this up now. And I think that the laws of each state are in place to handle close elections like this. And I believe that the laws are being interpreted. And I think it's a problem when someone comes in and tries to manipulate these laws and say that, well, they don't count now because this is so close, now we have to do this. Well, no, the laws are in place, so if it is close and if things need to be done in a bipartisan way, we follow these laws and we are happy with the outcome, which I think Vice President Gore may have stepped over the line and may have started pushing a little too much in the legal area instead of just letting the law run its course in Florida.
All right, Tim, thank you. Professor Kamek?
Well, you know, those are very wise insights. You know, one of the things, Catherine, you and I both know has happened in the last week or 10 days is that things that were occupying our time and attention before this have seemingly disappeared. A Middle East crisis where Israel and Palestine are at each other's throats, instability in the former Soviet Union, our relationships with North Korea. We're very fortunate that our nation is not confronting international threat to our national interests at the time. And we're very fortunate that even though the stock market seems to be as ambivalent as the Gore and Bush campaign, that the economy seems to be reasonably sound. But those are blessings you can't count on indefinitely. And it is important to get this behind us and to get a smooth transition underway where hopefully we can undertake a fresh start and a fresh start that has an element of just simply prudence and pragmatism and, as we were talking about before the election, bipartisanship, and I do think that becomes increasingly difficult to the extent that people are either calling each other names or filing lawsuits against each other during the course of the day.
What kind of concession do you want to see Al Gore make?
Well, I think now, you know, he has pushed it as far as he should push it. I think he's well past that line, in my judgment, but he made that call, and when the Florida Supreme Court speaks, and I believe, again, in my legal judgment, that they will resolve this in accordance with the way the statutes are written and therefore in George Bush's favor, I think at that point it's an end. There are other legal avenues he has. He can contest the election after it's certified under the Florida Code. That would start this process all over again. I don't think he should do that. He can support people trying to get electors to break their political pledge. I don't think he should do that, and I think he should come out publicly and say any of the Democratic consultants that are going around the country trying to get electors to be faithless to their loyalty and their pledge are wrong and are undermining what we expect them to do on December 18th when the Electoral College votes. So I think it's important now that if he does concede, that he tell anyone who has come to his side as a partisan, put down your swords. It's time to work together. We had our legal due process. The election is over. Now it's time for governing.
Let's go to Scott in Fargo. Scott, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to point out that I think if the shoe was on the other foot, George Bush would pursue the same avenues as Al Gore. And then the second thing is that I think one thing that's being overlooked is that Florida is governed by Jeb Bush, and all the Bushes, George Jeb and George Sr., are on the record as saying they'll do anything to win. That may be merely careless campaign rhetoric, but I think extraordinary measures are justified in order to ensure that the Florida count avoids the appearance of corruption.
Thank you, Scott. And, of course, we should also add in there that there are partisan Democrats who are howling at Secretary of State Katherine Harris's every decision, seeing in it a partisan decision.
Well, it's very hard, as you know, Katherine, to suddenly become nonpartisan when you were as a partisan. So that's
but doesn't that add to the argument that Vice President Al Gore did have to pursue these legal remedies, if only for the good of the country, so that everyone would know, look, we really, really went through this election with a fine-tooth comb?
Well, I can see the argument. I must say that
it makes you sigh, though. I don't know.
Was that an Al Gore sigh? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was.
It's early in the morning in California.
Okay.
I think it would have been heroic on Al Gore's part on election night, given the slim margin by which he lost, for him to decline the recount as the law authorized him to do. I think that would have taken an heroic person, and maybe his partisans or the country would have felt uneasy about that. So I think having the automatic machine recount was one thing that verified the vote. It narrowed the margin a bit, but nevertheless gave the election still to George Bush. I think the appropriate time then was, it didn't take a hero at that point to say, okay, I exercised my statutory process. But now it seems to me that we're really searching, we're really grasping at arguments. We're trying to torture explicit provisions of the Florida Code into saying something they don't say. We're trying to rewrite the laws of Florida after the time of the election. And that's now, you know, that's good lawyering. Goodness knows, you know, if this was a serious injury case, or if this was a case where, you know, we were trying to handle a difficult or complex commercial transaction or criminal prosecution, I would have my hats off to that kind of lawyering. But we have to remember that this aspect of our constitutional system is governed by vote, not by litigation, and I think we're in danger of losing that.
Let's go to Nick. He's calling us from Superior. Nick, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to state a couple facts. First of all, Al Gore won the popular vote in this country. The second fact is that in Florida we have a statistical tie. Now, Governor Bush understands that the intended vote in Florida would go for Al Gore. So if he's spun into office by people like the professor here, who is obviously showing his bias, his political partisan, by spinning out his rhetoric on the air here, saying that Al Gore's trying to fix the election and trying to get liberal ways to find votes, is the governor of Texas, if he's spun into office, is he going to want to be president, knowing that he's going to be an illegitimate president?
Well, Nick, I don't think there's illegitimacy on the first point. The Constitution of the United States says that it's the victor of a presidential campaign is the person who has the majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if, in fact, Governor Bush is awarded the electors in Florida, he will have clearly, legitimately, and unequivocally won the presidential election. I'm not shy about saying that, yes, I think Governor Bush is the preferred candidate, but I will say that I find it very difficult, separate and apart from that, to read into the Florida statute something that isn't there. And what isn't there is the ability to recast improperly cast votes. And that is what I think the Vice President has undertaken. And that, I think, is just simply not authorized by law.
Let's go to Steve in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yeah, hi. This is a question for the professor.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering why it was okay to consider the confusion over the military overseas ballots, but not those ballots in Palm Beach, Florida.
Good point. Hoist me by my petard. It does have you know, the appearance of being unprincipled, but I think there is this difference. The ballot in Palm Beach County substantially complied with the Florida requirements for the preparation of ballot. It was published in advance. A Democratic official designed it. The Democratic official designed it with the benign intent of making the font bigger and the layout more plain for people who, like me, who find it more and more difficult to read things as their eyes disappear on them. All that said, I think, suggests that there was compliance with the Florida Code with regard to that ballot. Now, with regard to the military ballot, my complaint is actually not so much with the recount in this particular instance, because I don't fault the Democrats for being aggressive to try and disqualify Bush votes. I mean, that's what you would expect them to do.
Now, when you say that, wouldn't you expect the Bush people to do the same thing?
Yes. Okay. Either side.
Thank you.
I mean, that's what you would expect partisans to do. My complaint really is that I think one of the things this exercise has disclosed is how ridiculously complex we have made it for military people to vote.
But can you make the argument that it has also exposed how needlessly sloppy some of the other election systems are?
Oh, without a doubt, Catherine. I mean, we're going to reap, even though we had to go through this anxiety, we're going to reap some important reform benefits in terms of the way we cast votes. There's no reason that we ought to be using non-uniform technology across the country. There's no reason we should be using a technology that was suitable for the 1960s rather than the year 2000. And there's no reason why we should make it far more complex to vote in a foreign post than in Palm Beach County. I venture to say that it doesn't surprise me that 39% or 40% of the military ballots were tossed out for non-compliance with the requirements, because the requirements were so densely written that they were incapable of being complied with. I mean, just think about an enlisted private in the Army who completes his absentee, who goes through the trouble, first of all, getting an absentee ballot from his home county, completes it, then hands it to his commanding officer. His commanding officer hands it to the diplomatic pouch. The diplomatic pouch brings it to the United States. That vote's not going to count because it doesn't have a foreign postmark. That is something that is just simply not appropriate in this country.
Well, I suspect that we could continue this particular argument, but I want to make sure we get to Tom in Rochester. Tom, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Yes.
What I find most disturbing about your speaker today, and that of James Baker, that he's often stated, is that he's impugned the integrity of the process. Those people who are Americans first, who are diligently counting the votes in Florida, doing their best to hand count each and every one that has both a opportunity for Democrats, Republicans, Independents to comment on and to verify and validate. And what your speaker is suggesting, and Baker has also suggested, is there's mischief and intent to improperly cast and count those votes. It's that of any process I've heard of all the arguments is the most destructive. Patiently waiting for the results to happen, Americans are anxiously hoping to have all the voices and all the votes count in their country. But to suggest that Americans, Democrat or Republican, are all set on miscounting and mischievously misrepresenting what the votes that are cast are. It's an honorable and a duty of every American to do what's right, and I think that Americans are doing that. And to suggest that otherwise is very destructive.
Let's let him respond. Professor Kamek?
Well, I don't want to impute anyone. I just think the process is not designed to give people good guidance when they undertake a function that wasn't envisioned by law. There is no guidance as to which Dimple, which Chad to count, and they're doing it inconsistently, even if they're people of goodwill. That's point number one. And point number two is, in these Democratic counties, if there's a dispute as to which vote counts or which ballot counts or which Dimple counts, it is decided by a panel that is dominated in each county 2-1 by Democratic voices. So that doesn't seem to me to be characterized by a process. That's not a process that's characterized by fairness.
All right. In the time that we have remaining, what should we look for this week with the Supreme Court hearing coming on and other political maneuverings going on as well?
Well, first of all, I would hope everybody in the country would watch as much as they can, given their work schedules and their other duties with their families, the arguments today, so that they're fully informed by the arguments before the Florida Supreme Court. I think we should watch to see how the court writes that opinion, whether it writes it consistently with the Florida statutes and the American Constitution, or whether it rewrites those statutes. And then I think we do have to watch how the candidates react. If the Florida court decides in favor of George Bush, as I think the law requires, I would hope the vice president, as we started this program, at that point would say, I have pursued legal due process, I have pursued the election mechanism, the time to bring this to a conclusion is now, it's the end of the process, and I wish the Bush administration well.
All right. We have run out of time. Professor, I want to thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, and you have wonderfully intelligent listeners. It was good to be with you.
Okay. We have been talking to Doug Kamek. He's chair and professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University. We also want to remind you that we will be carrying live coverage of those hearings scheduled to begin at 1 p.m. Central Time at the Florida State Supreme Court. We'll be carrying the national public radio coverage. It will be anchored by Neil Conan, and we urge you to join us. Also want to remind you that that if you've missed any mid-morning shows for the past week, you can find them online at minnesotapublicradio.org. Make sure that you click the link for mid-morning.
This is Ira Glass, and a half century ago, it was common for radio shows to play this little game.
Now here's tonight's message, an exciting clue about Monday.